all of the cops then proceeded to kind of...
That was sworn. Water protector Cody Hall, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. The charges were dropped against him. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan, Honey Massoud, Laura Gottesdiener, and John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Abe and Joe run down the ballot measures in the upcoming November election.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Bill McKibben Lecture in Portland, taking place Sunday, October 23rd at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Bill McKibben, world-renowned environmental activist, author, educator, and founder of 350.org, will speak about climate action beyond Paris. Again, that's Bill McKibben in Portland at the First Unitarian Church, 1121 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2016 Portland Veg Fest, Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd and 23rd at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest celebrates plant-based living with food samples, experts, and authors to discuss topics in health, animal welfare, and compassion, chef demonstrations, and more. Again, that's the 2016 Portland Veg Fest, Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd and 23rd at the Oregon Convention Center, Exhibit Hall A, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My goodness.
What?
It's raining.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you wouldn't believe that, would you?
Yeah. News flash.
Okay.
Rain in Western Oregon.
Yeah, really amazing. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's
yep.
Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. And we're going to do ballot measures.
Yeah.
And you can call us at 231-8187.
You can.
I hate doing
your commentary is both erudite and inspiring this morning,
Bill. Oh, I feel so excited by the ballot measures. Okay, so I'm just going to go through these in the order that I've encountered them. No rational discourse involved.
Yeah, well, why would we stumble into rational discourse at this
point?
Oh,
we don't do rational discourse.
Okay.
All right. And seriously, if you want to call us disagreeing or suggesting things or insights that are incredibly brilliant or even not so brilliant, call us at 231-8187. We do want to hear from you. And I'm really going to talk about these things, I guess. The first of these is a metro measure, 26-178.
You are jumping all around here.
Yeah, sorry. This is, I'm saying yes. Now, let me just point out to folks that we are not allowed by the FCC and others as a nonprofit to endorse candidates. You out there, on the other hand, can plug the hell out of your candidates. It's just us that can't.
Yeah. However.
However.
We can tell you what to do on ballot measures.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So tell us about this ballot measure.
What is this ballot measure? Oh, yes. This ballot measure. This is an interesting thing. It would preserve natural areas. It's a metro measure, 26-178.
This sustains a levy that's already in place.
Yeah, it's not a big change.
So there'd be no change right now to the way you're
not thinking. At all. In fact, voting against it would probably do some damage.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I like natural areas. I like clean water, and I like fish.
Well, that's, you like fish. How do you like fish?
I like them, you know, swimming in clean, natural water. That's how.
That's
I like
a very good answer.
Yeah. Okay. So yes on 26-178.
Yeah. Okay. Then the next measure, the Portland measure, 26-178. How do they figure out the numbering of this thing?
No idea, but that's not important right now.
Oh, okay. 26-179. Making income available, low income housing available. Very important.
Yes, this is a bond measure. So this is the assumption of public debt to construct low income housing.
Right, which we desperately need.
Let's be clear, this is a tax increase.
It is.
Yeah. Yes, which we desperately need. And I think you just hit the nail on the head there. The question of homelessness has come up on this show a number of times, and it's been a hot topic of debate in other media around the city as well. Always raising the question, well, what do we do? What do we do about this problem? These citizens who live among us with no place to live. And this is an attempt to answer that question.
No.
And it has my support.
It has my support.
Okay.
No, I actually think that it is an archetypal example of the cruelties of late-stage capitalism, that we have now built up a city that looks so pretty. We've, let's be quite frank here, through a series of measures, both national and local, we destroyed the African-American community in Portland and sent it scattering.
That's a little grandiose, but keep
no, it's not grandiose. It really did happen. It was definitely a planned activity. It begins way back, first with redlining.
No, I know what you're describing. Yeah. I know the historical process you're describing.
Yeah.
But I would not characterize the African-American community in Portland as dead.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
No, it is not thriving, and it does exist, and it now seems to reappear in the numbers, which is a expression for the 178th Street and so on.
As you're making your way out to Gresham.
As you head for Gresham. Okay.
And we are two white guys painting with a really broad brush here.
Yeah, we are. Okay.
So yes on 26-179. I say, what say you?
No, I agree.
Okay. This would assess a levy of approximately $75 per year on a median-priced home in Portland, which is $178,000 approximately.
Okay, well, let's just say that there is no median-priced home available in Portland for $178,000.
Yeah, okay. So you're looking at, I don't know, anywhere
$100, let's say.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah. Anywhere probably from $100 to $400 or $500.
Would you be willing to pay to make sure that people are not living on the street?
I would, yes.
So I am too. I support that. Okay, so, and then we move into the county measures.
Well, there's another Portland city measure.
There is. What is that?
26-180, establishing a tax on recreational marijuana sales.
Oh, that's interesting.
A 3% tax. Right now, the state tax is at 25% on recreational sales, and it is by law scheduled to drop as of January of next year from 25% to 17%. And this was all written into the law when recreational marijuana was legalized.
Oh, yes.
A couple of years ago. This was all planned. So this the statewide tax is going to drop, and this is going to allow local jurisdictions to ask voters to approve a 3% tax. And that's exactly what this measure is doing.
Have you noticed the number of marijuana stores in town?
Yeah, they're all over the place.
And what is that?
That's capitalism, man.
Oh, that's
yeah.
So good.
And I'm totally fine with this. What? See, the conversation around legalization has been going on for many years now. And always central to that conversation, at least in the people I've been talking to over the years, was a willingness on the part of the pro-legalization crowd to countenance taxation of marijuana sales. They say, make it legal, we'll tax it, we'll use the money on education, on healthcare, and all kinds of good things. And that's exactly what's happened. And that's exactly what this tax would do.
Yeah, I have only one objection to legalized marijuana. It's actually a serious one. I don't think there should be marijuana candy.
No.
No, not because it is more potent, but not just because of that, but because it's tempting to children. And I think that's a stupid way to market a product that could cause a child some distress.
I see.
So I think that the marijuana that you take as an oral product should taste and not look pretty.
So it should taste like Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
It should look really nasty.
Yeah. No, I'm well, I don't know about Brussels sprouts, but I'm so really serious about
it. Joe
really,
Uris.
No, I right. really find it stupid to make a marijuana candy look like something that a child would eat.
Okay. Well, that's really neither here nor there for the purposes of this conversation.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. So this 3% tax on recreational marijuana sales, and we should note that medical sales will not be taxed.
That's
this
true.
Tax will not apply. The funds collected will be used for drug and alcohol education and treatment programs.
So wait a minute. Now there's a tax on marijuana. You can buy the marijuana to learn that you shouldn't smoke it or eat it. Basically.
No.
No?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, maybe it's just heroin?
Well, no. There's
methadrine?
I have a feeling
alcohol.
I have a feeling you're playing dumb on this one, Joe.
Oh,
I think you know very well what
I think it's really weird because all the marijuana dealers I've ever met in my long life who still are in the business have nothing to do with legalization.
Yeah, that might be so.
And it's it's just a parallel universe.
It is, but a better one. A better one where nonviolent marijuana users don't have to be criminals. That's a better world, Joe.
I agree.
And this
and
tax
it's particularly
is part of
true.
That better world.
It's particularly true when you look at the stats, the number of persons of color who were in the prison system,
yes.
even in Oregon, compared to the persons, white population of marijuana users.
Yes. And to the state's credit, we are working to put those or liberate those people from their unwarranted imprisonment.
So can one buy marijuana at the university or the community college or the high school?
No, you have to go to a licensed marijuana retailer.
With a leaf
yes.
symbol.
Or a green cross or what have you.
Green cross. I love the green cross.
Much as you do with liquor. But then again, this is neither here nor there with respect to this initiative.
Okay.
So this would, the 3% tax would be used for drug and alcohol education and treatment programs, public safety investments.
Wait a minute, what's a public safety
Here's
investment?
How it's described in the voter's pamphlet.
Yes.
Public safety investments to reduce impacts of drug and alcohol abuse, such as police DUII training and enforcement, support for firefighter paramedics, street infrastructure projects that improve safety, and other initiatives to reduce the impacts of drug and alcohol abuse. Thirdly, the tax will be used for support for neighborhood small businesses, especially women-owned and minority-owned businesses, including but not limited to business incubator programs, management training, and job training opportunities, and providing economic opportunity and education to communities disproportionately impacted by cannabis prohibition. This is a proactive attempt to undo the damage done by the war on drugs, Joe.
Okay.
All right.
I'll let it go.
Yes on this one.
I'll probably vote. I'll vote yes. You can vote yes on that.
I will.
Drugs. I mean, it's just, drugs. We're in a drug society. We drug ourselves with pharmaceuticals.
We do.
We drug ourselves with alcohol.
We do.
So, just another drug.
Just another drug.
Just another wall.
Yeah, but it's just another drug whose users don't have to be needlessly imprisoned anymore. That is a better world.
Well, that is a better world, and that is, in fact, an improvement over what used to exist.
It's true. Okay, what's next?
Oh, I've lost track. Oh, the 26-181, it's larger, what is that, 181? I lost track here.
Is that a city, a metro?
What metro, is that? It's county.
It's county, okay.
I lost track. I'm sorry. I guess I'm just in a bad place. Okay.
I'll let that one pass without comment.
Too much.
All right, 26-181 is a county measure.
There it is. Yes.
It would amend the county charter, and it would extend term limits to 3 consecutive terms. Right now, the charter limits elected officers to 2 consecutive 4-year terms during any 1 12-year period.
So they would be able to do the same bad job longer.
Right, or the same good job longer.
Who does a good job? Oh, we can't say.
No, we can't.
We can't discuss who does a good job.
I'm sort of on the fence about term limits. I understand the frustration people feel who support them.
Yes.
But then again, I don't necessarily know that they're a remedy for the source of that frustration. There are some people who dedicate themselves to public service and are good, conscientious legislators and do a good job for a number of years.
Yes.
Sometimes term limits end careers that really don't deserve to be ended.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm on the fence on this one.
Okay, well, I don't care.
You don't care?
I have a bad attitude generally.
Yes, that's true.
I have a very bad attitude toward this process because we keep having these measures that, if they matter at all to business, are pitched with huge lies.
Oh, that's true, yes.
And there's no law against lying.
No, there's no law against lying. But I read some of these ballot measures, and there's some good governance in here. There's some enlightened things in here.
Okay.
But as far as the term limits go for county elected officials, I don't know.
I don't know.
Ask yourself how you feel about term limits and let that guide your vote.
Really. Well, we're really powerful on this one.
Yeah, that's right.
26-182, another Multnomah County ballot measure. This is, should charter be amended to allow commissioners to run for chair at the same time that they're on the county commission?
Yeah, so currently, you know, if you're on the county commission and you want to run for the chair of the county commission, you got to first resign your commission seat and then essentially run for a different commission seat. I don't really care.
No, I do. I think they should have to quit.
Do you?
Yeah, this is not a big thing for me. I don't care, really. But I just think that there's a tendency of certain elites to continue to survive through the process of name familiarity. And this is a way to make it more serious. Now, the chair has more powers than the members of the commission, but it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal.
So you're saying vote no, keep things the way they are.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but no, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care either.
I don't really care. I have a bad attitude toward the whole thing.
It's true.
I don't care. All right, the number 26-183, again a Multnomah County issue. Shall the charter be amended to change from an elected to an appointed sheriff? Now, that's an issue.
No, it should not. Let's keep electing the sheriff.
Well, look at the cruddy sheriffs we get.
Do you think we get better sheriffs by appointment, by fiat?
I have no idea. I do think that we haven't had a good sheriff since Don Clark.
Well, be that as it may.
Okay.
I'm of the opinion that given the opportunity to choose between electing a public official and having that official appointed,
we should elect.
I opt for election every time.
Democracy better.
Yes.
No better.
Yes.
Okay.
So vote no on 26-183.
All right.
All right. What's next?
26-184.
That makes sense.
Hey, real logic. limits contributions, expenditures, requires disclosure in Multnomah County candidate elections. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is clear good governance right here. This makes everybody divulge who's giving them money. It sets hard limits on how much money can be donated for county races. This is a good idea.
It's really a good idea. I care about this one. 26-184, vote yes. All right. Now, moving on.
It's interesting that not a single argument against that was filed.
Who would dare?
Who would dare?
Where are we? Oh, we jump. We jump now.
Wait. I even put a star by this one because it was so funny. I take that. I rescind that comment. There was one argument filed in opposition to measure 26-184.
Okay.
And I'm going to read parts of it because it's that good.
Okay.
This is an argument against the imposing donor limits on county races.
Oh.
Oregon elections are rigged by big money. Let's keep it that way.
That's a straight out thing. Okay.
Power to the best people with the most money. In Oregon, the best people include timber company executives, commercial real estate developers, and leaders of multinational corporations. As the distinguished leader, Donald J. Trump, said, as a businessman and a very substantial donor to very important people, when you give, they do whatever the hell you want them to do. Another quote from Trump. I gave to many people before this. Before 2 months ago, I was a businessman. I give to everybody. When they call, I give. And you know what? When I need something from them 2 years later, 3 years later, I call them. They are there for me. When I call, they kiss my ass.
I love that. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Corruption is important. It's as American as apple pie. Or is that violence?
This argument, by the way, finishes by saying, money is speech, the best speech. Don't let voters spoil our rigged system. This information furnished by committee of the best people with the best words.
That is good.
Well played, committee of the best people with the best words. Well played indeed.
Yeah, and I want to remind you that calling us to argue or to agree or to remark on any of this stuff, 231-8187. This is so weird. Going through this stuff.
No,
that's good. I'm glad you reminded us of that. Now we're moving on to the state measures.
No, we've got another county measure.
We do?
Yep, 26-185.
What's that?
This would amend the Charter Review Committee appointment process, sets an appointment and convenes timelines. I have no idea. This seems Byzantine and inscrutable to me. I don't know really what it means or what it does. Here, I'll read from the pamphlet.
Go ahead.
This measure proposes changes to Chapter 12.40 of the County Charter, which establishes the process for appointment of the members of the Charter Review Committee and adds administrative requirements. It seems a purely administrative measure.
Yeah, but you know those charter review committees have a lot of power.
Do they?
And they're not really in public in the public light.
I say I don't know how I'm going to vote on this. I need to learn more about it.
So we're really prepared on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
This is what could make this onerous for a lot of people, and what keeps a lot of people from voting on local initiatives. Is that this, at first glance, really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to people who don't live in this world.
Real right.
Yeah. So we're going to do a little more research, listeners.
Well, they'll all send their ballots in already.
Yeah, probably.
Too late.
Yep.
All right.
All right, what's next?
94.
Oh, we're into the state measure.
This is a state measure. This proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to prohibit legislative assembly or individuals from fixing age for mandatory retirement of judges.
Yeah, right now the Constitution says state judges are required to retire when they turn 20 or 75.
Yeah.
And this would remove that requirement.
And it wouldn't allow me to be a judge.
Well, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, this is that.
Yes. But, you know, this seems pretty arbitrary to me. I mean, there's a lot of people who at age 75 are perfectly capable of continuing to serve as judges competently.
You know what? I think we have a caller.
I think we do.
Who do we have?
Norm. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, my name. Yeah, I'm Norm.
Hey, Norm. Hi, Norm.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to make a comment about the thing about term limits. Mm-hmm. You know, we already have them. They're called elections.
You know, that's true.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I would not vote for term limits, you know, just because what you said, Joe. You know, there's a lot of folks that, you know, are pretty darn good. Why the heck do we want them to have to leave just because of some rule we don't really need?
Well, I think on the judges one, for example, it's a good example. Saying that when a person reaches 75, they should retire from being a judge, you know, that might have made sense in 1849 or something, because 75 at that point would be pretty old. Today, that's not even relevant.
Oh, heck no.
I mean, exactly. I actually know people in their low hundreds that are doing all right.
Yep.
Well, I don't mean low hundreds like 232, but, you know, 104 or something like that.
Right. So, you know, I also want to say to you guys, you are the most necessary morning show for me every week. I really admire you, and, you know, I really admire, you know, just the way you speak truth.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Appreciate
it. Yeah, I don't know that I'm so true. I think I'm sarcastic more than true.
Actually. Yeah, that's cool.
All right. Listen.
Sarcasm is okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for the point. Anyway, and I agree with the guy.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Agreed.
If you disagree or you want to say something else, you're more than welcome. Please call us, 231-8187.
Or you can leave a written comment on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeAndJoe.
Yeah.
Okay. You can tweet at HonestAbe72. All right. Where are we? Ballot title, the Measure 94, statewide measure.
Yeah, that was the deal
The judges. Let the old codgers continue to judge.
Here comes the judge. Boom. Okay. And now we go to 95, public university investments. Well, you know, you have a conflict of interest. I have a conflict of interest.
No, not necessarily.
Well, come on.
Public universities.
Yeah.
Should they be able to invest in stocks, essentially?
Absolutely.
Should they be able to invest in stocks?
As they rise, let them fall.
See, I don't know about this.
Link them to the economy.
The argument here is that for many years running now, tuition has gone up in our state university system.
Yes. Also at the community colleges.
Also at the community colleges, but more dramatically in the university system.
Yes.
So obviously this places a disproportionate burden on students now who have to come up with a lot more money to go to school and usually do so by going into debt. So the argument, one of the arguments in favor of this measure is that if you allow the university system to play the market, they're going to have more resources. They're not going to have to raise tuition as much. They might even raise enough money to offer more scholarships, so on and so forth.
Have you looked at the market recently?
Well, the market's doing pretty well, but the market doesn't always do well. You know, we're all anybody who has a retirement plan these days, because there are virtually no defined benefit pensions left anymore.
Good point.
Virtually anybody who has a retirement plan is subject to the whims of the market. That makes me feel less than secure about my retirement plan. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. But the larger question I have here is that if we want to support our university system more, then let's support our university system more. Let's raise taxes on the wealthy and increase funding out of the general fund. Let's make that investment on behalf of the future of our state. Let's not place that future and deliver it into the whims of the free market, which is neither free nor dependable.
Nor really a market, actually.
Yeah. I'm not unsympathetic to the desire to better fund our universities. In fact, I think that's the mark of a great civilization. But I don't know that this is necessarily the way to do it.
I have very mixed feelings on this one. I think neither you nor I are advocating on this. Is that correct?
I've written in my pamphlet no with a question mark.
Okay.
I'm leaning no.
All right. We want to remind people that you can call in, disagree with us, or suggest something else, or point out important things. 231-8187. Who do we got? Tim?
What's on your mind, Tim?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, man.
A little chewing. Yeah, I have a question. Every time I get my ballot, and I'm going through the ballot, and I get towards the back, I look down, and there's all these judges.
Yeah.
But nobody's opposing them.
Right.
They're all running unopposed.
Yes.
Now my first question is, how do they originally get to become judges?
You mean if, given that there's no opposition, how the hell did they get there? They're usually appointed, is the answer.
Okay, they're appointed.
Yeah.
But then...
then they have to run.
Okay, yeah. Why are they always unopposed? There's no attorneys that are willing to be judges? What's going on?
I don't know. That's a good question.
No, it's a very good question.
I don't know the answer
and,
to that.
And the only answer I can think of is really that somehow an establishmentarian bias exists in the system. Unless a judge is caught in flagrante delicto, as an old-fashioned expression, mm-hmm. or otherwise makes a mess of things, they just keep coming. They just stay, and it's all name familiarity. And I guess the money isn't big enough.
I mean, not only that, it's like I've lived in this town for like 35 years.
Right.
And I've been a voter the whole time I've been here, and I have never seen, you know, Joe Blow running against Judge so and so. You know, I mean, it's never happened.
Well, it does happen occasionally. Back in the bad old days when I was but a youth, there were a lot of really horrible judges, particularly in the municipal courts here. There was a guy named Labadie who I saw him in court fine a woman for having pants on, rather than a skirt.
Oh, my goodness.
For example. And he was very harsh on persons of color. And he also was whimsical, but not funny. So, you know, it would be better if there were more people who were willing to run. One of the things is you can't just be a judge. I can't be a judge because I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
So there are certain qualifications that may limit the number of people who are involved.
Well, I mean, as long as you're an attorney, you know, and you've graduated from law school and been an attorney for a while, it seems to me you can run.
Well, that's true. No, and I think often they have committees, and you look at who's on the committee, and it turns out to be significant lawyers from significant law firms. You know,
and so, it even goes back to what's he called, the district attorney. I remember when looking at my ballot one time, and what, Michael Schrunk was unopposed.
Yeah, he was. He was unopposed, and in fact, he was the son of the mayor who was mayor forever, back in the good old days,
beginning
in the late 50s.
Yeah. Wasn't his father indicted or something like that?
Well, yeah, but he beat the rap.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, you know, let's be fair. The fact that you're indicted doesn't mean you're guilty.
Right.
Hey, well, listen, we got to keep moving through these. Okay. Thank you very much for the call.
No, but I think his point is interesting.
Yep, it is. Bye. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, okay.
All right, who else do we have? Sonny, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, go ahead.
Sonny, mine.
Hi, good morning. Well, you know, pertaining to the housing issue and the homelessness, which is so important and increasing every day.
Yep.
Okay. Then, of course, the cost of land is increasing every day, especially Portland Metro or all across Oregon. I'm worried that for whatever reason, we won't see much housing come out of that opportunity to get it going, which is still a good idea. But the taxes will increase because we oftentimes don't see much come from any state effort. For instance, the lottery and its economic development. Like what? You know, where? Oh, but they're good at maintaining the parks. They can keep the trails cut back. That's good. Or, you know, help the gambling addicts a little bit until they get back at the machines. But the thing is, for the Portland area, there's only so much area where you can put housing anyway because of the urban growth boundary. So you're going to have to figure out how to create outlying communities, and then people are going to have to get back and forth without further congestion, including the I-5 situation, which is getting more and more congested. So you're going to have high-speed rail. So why not put it together with the lottery and say, could you please allow us to buy some tickets to get some housing going? Could you try to do that?
Well, actually, apart from your interesting suggestion, the fact of the matter is that right now the grand scheme for Portland seems to be to destroy all of the single-family homes in all of the neighborhoods in the southeast and the northeast and the north. This is definitely on the planned books, and it's going to create a lot of cheap, I would say shabby, but that's just my judgment, apartment buildings that will give enormous profit both to the builders and to the owners of those properties. I'm very unhappy with the fact. I'm really a reactionary, and it seems to me having people have their own homes, small homes, is a smart thing.
Yes.
And that is really jeopardized right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an enormous influx, I don't know why, of, I don't know that this is the right term for them, but they are the, what are the millennials, the hip young people. I don't know why they're hip or young. I mean, they're young because they're young. But, you know, come on. This is a funky butt town, and it's never, ever going to be San Francisco. And I'm kind of glad of that.
Well, you know, so they're going to build up and pile people on top of one another, and Portland is going to lose its character.
Right.
And but even then, it will not meet the need, and eventually they're going to have to do something about I-5 really fast, so they're going to have high-speed rail.
Yes.
And so why not put those communities? And then the other thing is, if you got the lottery going with it, then people buy a ticket and they think, well, maybe I can get a house. And what you do is you say there's five different regions in Oregon.
Wait, how about a lottery for houses?
Well, I thought, yeah, why not put a house in each region or an allotted sum? You could earn, you know, you could win $500,000 for a house on the coast or elsewhere. But, you know, I called that idea into the governor, you know, who wants to remain governor. And I think if she got that going, she could remain governor. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I just think that there's going to have to be an awful lot of funding going to get something done at all.
Well, I sort of agree with you, but I also think that we need rent control and a lot of other things like that that are not going to happen.
No, probably. And also even with what might pass here and lottery, there will still be a lot of stuffing money into pockets.
Well, I'm all for stuffing money into pockets as long as my pocket is being stuffed. You see, I'm totally an opportunist.
You're very human.
Well, I definitely Very human. Anyway, thank you for the call. And your points are not invalid. They're good.
All right. Who else do we have? Doug.
Again.
How you doing,
if
Doug?
If you need assistance, dial your operator.
Oh, okay. Well, Doug, hopefully you'll try again.
Okay.
All right. Measure 96.
96. Dedicates 1.5% of... How do they decide these percentages?
I don't know. Well, they probably figure out how much money they need and then...
1.5% of state lottery net proceeds, not gross, net proceeds to funding support services for Oregon veterans. I can't find a reason to oppose that. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Veterans, you know, there's no draft now, right? Mm-hmm. Veterans are going into the armed forces either for ideological or income reasons, opportunity reasons. Mm-hmm. they get totally messed over, made to do many tours of duty in combat zones that we shouldn't be in, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then they come home, and combat is bad for your mental and physical health. So, you know, they are needy. They are needy.
Yes.
So do we say, well, you know, ideologically we oppose the war you were in, therefore we will punish you by not helping you? Or do we acknowledge that the whole system is so messed up and these people have done something very, what they perceived as service to the society, and shouldn't we take care of them?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you in principle. We do a shameful job of looking at people whom we have asked to go halfway around the world and kill
people. Kill other people, right.
Right. And they come home often severely damaged, both psychologically and physically, from that. And we have done a poor job of seeing to their well-being afterward. The only thing that gives me pause about this measure is that it amends the Constitution on a budgetary issue.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think that really is a good point.
I mean, this is something we might be able to do by way of statute rather than amending the Constitution. I'm not opposed to amending the Constitution in general. I don't have a problem with that. But when you do it regarding a fiscal issue, the state's required to balance its budget every biennium.
Right.
So that conceivably could mean that however worthy the cause, taking care of veterans, we might have to do that at the expense of something else that we need to do equally as much. Because we've got to balance the budget every 2 years. So it removes a certain amount of flexibility from the budgetary decision-making process. But I don't know if that's enough to justify a no vote. I need to think some more on this one, I think.
I think so. And I think it really, once again, thank goodness, it's up to you out there who are voting. We have a lot of people calling us. Who do we got? Christy?
Kristen.
Good morning. Christian. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to add a little more detail to measure 26178, which is Metro Natural Areas. And also, I don't think you've gotten to talk about it yet, but the state measure 99, which is funding for outdoor school.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Haven't got there yet.
We haven't got there yet.
Yeah, I know. There's so much to talk about. I just wanted to add, as a person who runs a program to get young people from low-income and diverse neighborhoods into the outdoors, you know, to equalize our access to these places. The measure 26178 not only gives money, as you said, for, you know, fish and restoration and natural things, but there's a big chunk of money in there that's for conservation education grants and also getting diverse groups outdoors. So it allows a competitive process for small organizations like mine, Urban Nature Partners PDX, to compete for grants to kind of, you know, equalize access to these kinds of places. So, you know, for kids that are living in these small apartments we've been talking about, if their parents can't get them outdoors, you know, who's going to do it? So, and also the outdoor school issue, right? This is creating, I wouldn't say it's permanent, but more permanent funding from lottery for kids to go to outdoor school for the full 6 days. And that impacts, you know, those kids from those low-income schools, kids that have never had a chance to be away from home outdoors.
Well, I agree with you. I think you're right.
So both of these things, I think, are environmental justice measures.
I agree with you.
We should vote for them for those reasons.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate the call. We both agree with you. And I want to say that we really, as a society, do not exploit appropriately the natural environment in which in Oregon is kind of neat.
So thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Okay.
All right, measure 97.
We're going to go to 97, then we'll go back to you folks. So hang in there. 97, this is the big one.
Yeah.
It's a big one because the huge corporations are fighting it and, I think, lying a lot.
Yes, they are. A whole bunch of money coming from out of state. Dire predictions about how everything's suddenly going to be drastically more expensive and this is just going to be the end of civilization as we know.
And as far as I can tell from all the experts I know, including economists, ain't so.
No, it ain't so. Oregon's has the lowest corporate taxation rate in the nation.
Right.
And really all this would do is raise the what's called the corporate minimum tax, meaning that corporations with X amount of sales in a year, this is the way things already work, by the way. We already have a corporate minimum tax. It already taxes gross sales. One of the attacks on this measure is that we shouldn't be taxing gross sales. We should be taxing profits. Well, we've already been taxing gross sales for a long time. So a company that makes X amount of dollars in sales, according to the law right now, has to pay so much tax. But there's a lot of ways in Oregon to avoid for corporations to avoid paying that tax. So we have in place something called the minimum tax, which says, well, you got to pay at least this much, corporations. You got to pay at least this much.
If you exceed $25 million.
Right. And so what this ballot measure does is it raises that minimum amount. It raises that floor, if you will. So this is not a case of draconian excessive taxation. This is saying, all right, the small amount that the law requires you to pay corporations is going to be raised a little bit. And so quit crying, corporations.
Well, and the money, although there's no actually no clear way it's supposed to happen, but the money is supposed to go to education, healthcare, and senior services, right. All of which are good things.
Right. All of which are good things.
And I'm definitely, first of all, I'm outraged by the huge campaign organized by outside, out-of-state, very rich corporations and a few local opportunists.
Yeah, that's very true.
Some of them I like, but not in this case.
I also have to say, I'm not unsympathetic to the argument that says this is going to harm homegrown businesses, or when I say harm, I mean tax at a higher rate, homegrown businesses, in addition to out-of-state and multinational corporations. I'm not unsympathetic to that argument. And maybe in a perfect world, there might have been exceptions carved out for homegrown Oregon-based businesses of certain sizes. This measure does not make those provisions. But nevertheless, I think it's a good idea for the state.
We're talking excess of $25 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Well,
the argument that keeps coming up is Powell's Books. Oh, this would impact Powell's Books. Well, if Powell's Books is doing that well, probably they can afford to pay a little more.
Also, Powell's Books is no longer simply a local operation.
No, it's got a massive internet presence.
Yeah, it's competing with Amazon and so on.
And really, is Powell's Books going to pull up stakes and move their flagship store in downtown Portland? Are they really going to do that?
Well,
I don't think they are.
They might.
No.
They might. They might.
No.
Okay. The other thing that's a little bit concerning is that there's no mechanism for making sure that that money goes to its purposes, which are education, healthcare, and senior services. But I think it's a minor quibble, actually. Minor quibble. And we should go to the phones.
John,
you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to get back to the quandary about the judges, because when I get to that list at the end of the show, of the ballot,
show is not inaccurate.
I go online to Google and try and find out what is out on these people that are running for their judgeships, and it's very hard to get any information. Does anybody have any insight on how to vet them? Because I won't vote for someone I don't know who they are.
Well, that's a really interesting point, and it is an interesting problem. Unless you actually are a lawyer following a judge's career and decision-making, she or he may become completely anonymous to you. We've had some very smart judges, and we've had some really creepy ones, and there's no way to know in the process the way it's done now. So you have a good point.
I found some things where you can go to where there's a listing of judges online through the state, and you can kind of read about their history. Otherwise, if my life hasn't been directly impacted by standing in front of a particular judge for whatever reason, I have no way to value that person's, you know. I don't know. And there's no list ahead of time. Is there? I've been looking through the pamphlet. There's no ahead list so that we could try and do some, you know. But I'll,
no, and there's no, ballot. There's no. It's not like baseball where you have, stats.
Well,
no stats.
There are online stats. Through I don't have that information in front of me, but I did find that. But I'm a little bit disturbed that I can't find more information or ways to...
Yeah. Back in the old days when I used to run afoul of the law more than I do now, I've appeared in front of judges for both minor and what could be jailing things. And in one case, a totally nonsense thing. I don't want to tell the story right now because we don't have time, but basically a policeman who didn't like me, He just really didn't like me, arrested me for carrying a concealed weapon, which was a pocket knife, which was not concealed. And I went before a judge, I believe it was Judge Labadie, and I had to involve an attorney and so on. And the judge continued the charge indefinitely. Now, that's not legal anymore because my lawyer went after that. But what that essentially did was hang me out to dry forever.
Right.
And... I learned from that bad judges can make bad decisions.
As well as I. But I have also been in front of judges that have shown common sense and leniency.
Yeah.
So to me, that's an arbiter of a fair-minded, open-minded person that has the ability to affect our lives.
Well, and I think that...
ask more questions.
Yeah, I think that what I experienced in the earlier period of time, that what I saw in the late 60s, early 70s, has not been so much so prominent as far as I know. But I don't have the number of friends I used to have who were lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I don't know what's going on there, you know? And I believe that the people in Black Lives Matter and some other places probably have a more clear view, which I don't have. So, the judges really are important. And yes, they really are virtually anonymous. And it is a problem. And I don't know how to solve it.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Good show, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, sorry I'm not more up
on
the judges.
Who else we got?
I just beg the question for all of us. Maybe someone will come up with an answer.
Okay.
Hey, thank you. Who do we have, Steve? Jerome, good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Very well, thanks.
Hey, long-time listener, lifelong lefty, KBOO supporter, but I'm going to tell you guys, I really... Joe, why aren't you a political science professor?
Why am I not?
No, I thought that aren't for your career. Aren't you didn't you teach at Portland State political science?
I've taught at the community college level, and then I moved up to a professorship at Portland State.
Yeah.
My two fields of study can be embraced by the term critical theory, but I've taught in the disciplines of sociology and American history.
Right. Okay. Well, here's... You're talking to a guy who, being a lifelong lefty and progressive, I almost have never met a tax increase I wasn't willing to vote for.
Aha, right.
But I know the guys on the editorial board of the Willamette Week, and if you read their take on the housing bond and their take on Measure 97, it really gives you pause. Rob Justice, Home First, offered to build X number of units for X dollars, and the minute the city and the government are involved, they need another $258 million to build the same number of units. I mean, Rob Justice, you guys know who I'm talking about. The problem is when the government builds the housing, the costs go through the roof. It just, we give the government more money, and, you know, an apartment that should cost $200,000 goes up ridiculously. I mean, Nigel Jaquess's article about this is sad and sobering.
So you're recommending to listeners that it's worth their time to read this article before they decide how to vote on this?
Absolutely, because giving the government more money is not going to solve the housing problem. Everybody should write a check for $500 and give it to Habitat for Humanity. Okay. That's my, that's one. Two, the tax measure 97, which I'm going to have a hard time voting against, but I'm going to vote against it. Probably the first time in my life I voted against something like this. There are at least 1,000 corporations in Oregon that are C Corps that are going to get hit by this tax.
Ah.
Okay. And,
by C Corps, you mean
your company?
You mean they're nonprofits? What's a C Corp?
Any company that's a standard U.S. corporation, uh-huh. C Corp, is going to be liable for this.
Oh, okay. C Corp is a typical corporation.
A typical for-profit corporation.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's just a standard operating company.
Got it. All right.
Okay. Let's POW. Okay. Just the tip of the iceberg. Having to reorganize your company out of a C Corp into a different corporation is very complex and very expensive. But that, I can even justify, hey, if we're going to nail Phil Knight and telling everybody who doesn't pay any tax, well, there's going to be some collateral damage. Mm-hmm. No, it's bigger than that. And that's where I want your reader or your listeners to go read for the Willamette Week to come out and say vote no on this. I couldn't believe it. But what did they say? They said legislation written by lobbyists, it's not good legislation. This measure was written by the lobbyists and the policy wonks of the Public Employees Union. That's not who's supposed to. That's why the blind spot for the 1,000 corporations. Legislators would have not allowed. That would have been, there would have been a carve out. Bad legislation. And my last point is, if I could be guaranteed that every penny of this was going to go to classrooms and the other things you mentioned, I'd be out campaigning for it. The bulk of this money, when it hits the general fund, is going to go to bail out the PERS mess.
Well, I that's not what it says.
No. You got read the Willamette Week analysis. Once the money's in the general fund, it is in the general fund.
That's true.
Not required by law to go.
No, that is actually true, and that I think I mentioned earlier that concerns me about it.
Yes,
I think.
And again, legislatures wouldn't allow. If they wrote the law, it wouldn't have that kind of slippery slope language.
Well, I you and I are going to disagree on this one, but I appreciate your comment. It is not a cut and dried issue. I believe firmly, though, that there ought to be a tax on the larger corporations that operate in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So that's
sign me up. I'll go walk around the state capitol with you.
And you know what? The more general point that I think your argument makes, which is don't just take mine and Joe's word for it, is absolutely true.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust me with you.
I
wouldn't trust me with your gold.
No,
I love you guys.
No, you people should go out and find as many sources of information as they can.
Lloyd Marabet, God bless him, taught me 39 years ago when I moved to Oregon, don't take my word for any of this.
Really?
Read about it.
Okay,
hey, thank you for the call.
Good work, man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I will add to what Abe said. Look, this is our opinions. We are not sacred beasts.
No. You know, and sometimes we're even wrong.
Never.
Well, sometimes.
I'm never wrong. Now we're going to 98. I want to get through these, so I'm just going to really fast. A state of Oregon ballot measure 98, Oregonians for High School Success. I like this.
Oh, yeah. This brings back CTE programs in high school.
You know, I didn't even know.
Automotive repair and all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even know that our high schools, and I, as I think about it, there was a sexual separation. There was Girls Poly High School, which, for all I know, taught homemaking. I don't know. It's not existent anymore. Its programs were merged with Benson, which they nearly shut under this previous administration of the schools. And in fact, there are many jobs, including tech jobs, that don't and shouldn't really require a university degree.
Yeah.
So prepping for a university for everybody is sort of silly.
Exactly. And given the fact that Oregon has a robust high-tech sector here, that a lot of places don't. That means the range of these sort of technical jobs is pretty broad. And we're talking about things like computer-aided drafting, like graphic design, like all sorts of stuff here. This is a smart measure. This is good governance. This is putting money in education in a very practical and useful and positive way.
I agree. And it's only 1.4% of the whole state budget, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
And I really think it's a class. It's also a class issue. A lot of people, one of the things that happened through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and so on was an emphasis on getting a bachelor's degree or a master's mm-hmm. degree. It's a good idea to have a better educational system, and it's certainly a good idea if high schools were better and grade yep. schools were better. But the fact of the matter is that there's lots of really important work that can be done by people who don't have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. I think this is one of those rare pieces of legislation around which virtually everyone agrees. There's not a single argument in opposition, not even an ironic one like we had before.
Yeah, where's the ironic negativity?
This is just a good idea.
And then there's 99. This is the last one.
Yep.
Wow. It's outdoor school education funding. And then we had a young woman or an older woman. I don't know how old she is. Why do I say that?
I don't know.
We had a lady call us to say, hey, you know, this is a good idea. I think outdoor school is very important.
Yep.
I think it should be much more part of a laboratory of teaching than it is at this point. But it's always improvable as long as it exists. And this is really crucial. We need a fund to make sure that every person, every young person gets a chance to be outside for a week.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in California, so I didn't get to experience outdoor school. But I have two kids who grew up in Oregon who did, and both of them loved it. It was a profound experience for them both.
Yes.
It's a great thing, and we should do everything we can to not only preserve it, but strengthen it.
Yes, we agree on that.
Yes, we do.
We have callers now. Is there any more?
Yeah, we got one more. Let's do
one
that
more.
Very
what
quickly.
Is it? What is it?
This is Measure 100. This would prohibit the purchase or sale of parts or products from certain wildlife species. Basically, you can't traffic in weird exotic animal parts in Oregon.
And good idea.
I'm all for that.
Oh, a good idea. I think it's disgusting. First
is.
Of all, I think, you know, a lot of things that involve animals are murderous. And I'm very much opposed to trafficking in these exotic things, which end up going into markets in parts of the world that believe they're somehow medicinal.
Yep.
And I don't like that.
Agreed.
And I don't. And I.
Or decorative.
Or decorative. I think a head of a dead creature on the wall is really awful.
I don't think there's any reason anybody needs anything made out of ivory.
No.
I can't justify that at all. So there you have it.
Oh, well, we did them, and we have callers.
No, on number 100.
Yeah.
All right, who's next?
Wait. No, on 100. What is
Mitch,
it? What
that was saying? The wildlife trafficking.
No.
Measure 100.
Okay, this is prohibit. You mean yes.
Right. Oh, excuse me. Yes.
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 On Measure 100.
Okay.
Yes. We're going to prohibit those things. Whoo. Thank you. Okay. Who's next? Mitch.
Yes. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah really.
Small but important distinction.
Got one non-rhetorical question.
Okay. Sure.
You can't, as KBOO, being a nonprofit broadcaster,
mm-hmm.
Apparently because part of the mission is public interest.
Right.
And that tells us that everybody that's advertiser-driven is private interest.
Right.
So the question is, and again, I don't know the answer, so this is not rhetorical. So the question is, why is it that megachurches, like some of the Baptist churches that come out and endorse Donald Trump, don't lose their tax status?
That's a very good question. And the answer, I think, is it because the block of voters represented by those mega churches is large enough and powerful enough that government is afraid to take appropriate corrective action there? I think that churches should have lost their tax-exempt status a long time ago.
I see. So that could be argued by on grounds of law, not on political persuasion.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to add something to that because it's really important. I do not understand. This is me speaking only as me. I do not understand how people who are religious, preaching a Judeo-Christian Islamic sense of ethics, can support anybody who is a creepazoid. Now, okay. I'm not naming the creepazoid. I would not name the creepazoid.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that from a non-rhetorical standpoint.
I understand.
And we're running out of time, so I don't want to get into the rhetoric or I'd be here all day.
Really?
But another issue is that your previous caller had two wonderful points there to make about Willamette Week's sins of commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to point to a couple of sins of omission, which are trickier to see because you're essentially criticizing a paper for choosing not to write about something.
Mm-hmm.
And these two-point sins of omission from the advertiser-driven Willamette Week that I should say up front, I really respect their muckraking.
Mm-hmm.
But the two things they haven't covered is since the settlement by our one-party blue state government led by Governor Brown and AG Ellen Rosenblum.
We've got to wrap it up very quickly.
Attorney General, they have not criticized the Oracle settlement that screwed us, the taxpayers of Oregon.
Okay, that's something that we have time to really visit. It's a good point, and we're out of time, and I hope this was useful to people.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a little...
curmudgeonly? Yes.
Curmudgeonly, yes.
Thanks to everybody for your input.
All right.
And we'll be back at you next
week. And the main thing is, for goodness sake, vote.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nazis. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning on The Boo at 11:30 on Art Focus, Andre Middleton interviews Portland painter Matthew Slim Pickens Abelman about art and satire. Before that, at 11 o'clock on Stage and Studio, D'Mae Roberts focuses on Milagro Theater's El Muerto Vagabundo, a Day of the Dead show about homelessness. Before that, at 10:15 on Flashpoints, Robert Mirapol and his daughter Jennifer explain new efforts to clear the name of Robert's mother, Ethel Rosenberg.